Welcome to Dolphinville Radio. This is an experiment in time and space, broadcasting from the middle of the Pacific Ocean, Paradise, Hawaii, of Lemurian ancestry. These cyberwave frequencies are coming to you as an exclusive benefit from the people living here in Dolphinville. This is a new bandwidth of information, a new informational flow for your benefit, and for your joy and celebration. We're here to celebrate a new way of thinking and being that's currently evolving on our planet. We can now recognize there is another bona fide intelligent species that occupies our world besides humans. They're here, and they have consciousness. Humans have only recently accepted cetaceans as part of our modern cultural matrix, as in the past 50 years, their species has made a conscious effort to gain our attention. There's a good reason for this. We humans have intruded upon their domain and assaulted and enslaved them. And we're challenging their very existence on planet Ocean. They're trying to call our attention to it. The recorded history of human species has thus far demonstrated our propensity for violence and insensitivity to one another in our environment. But that cycle of existence is now changing, now passing. A new season of higher consciousness and connected awareness is now available to anyone who would wish to recognize it. The dolphins and whales are here to assist us in this transition to a shifted understanding of our connectivity. They have had eons of time to understand and use such expanded awareness of the multidimensional realms, and now stand ready to encourage the same development on the part of humans. Not only do the cetaceans represent this decided shift in our human intellect, but also show us that another sentient race exists on this planet. We're ready to accept that, and we're ready to move into a new way of thinking about ourselves in relationship to the cosmos. We are no longer alone. So open your minds and hearts to this new sensation and way of being. Feel the joy and the peace of a fifth dimensional awareness, a pod mind mentality. It awaits your acceptance and realization. We are no longer alone in this universe. We are awakening to who we really are, light beings connected to the source of all that is. The cetaceans have anticipated this moment for eons of time, and they're inviting us to join them now in this joyful recognition and a new understanding of this liberated state of being. I'm grateful to have such an opportunity and invite you to join me in this celebration. This week, we have again Joan Ocean as our guest, and we're very happy to have Joan with us to bring in some very, very important information. So during the celebration, Joan will be able to bring in some new information for us to understand. But first, I want to bring to your attention that this whole program is being provided through the generosity of our friends at Photon.net. Photon is an internet service provider. They're service providing access to over 28,000 local dial-up numbers across the United States and Hawaii. Also a wide range of professional internet services like web hosting, e-commerce, multimedia broadcasting, virtual tours, webmail, and much more. So we're asking you to please visit photon.net on the web at www.photon.net. That's spelled P-H-O-T-O-N, as we all recognize and have heard of the photon belt. As a special this week, anyone listening to this broadcast is entitled to a free sign-up and setup fees for web hosting or national internet access on photon.net when using your referral code Joan Ocean. And when you sign up, and you'll get that special discount. So once again, I want to recognize that we have Joan Ocean as a guest. Many of you who know Joan are listening to this broadcast, but some of you who may not be familiar with her. She's a master of science in counseling psychology. She's also a shaman and an author of two books published in four languages. The Dolphin Connection, Interdimensional Ways of Living, published in 1989, and Dolphins into the Future, published in 1997. She offers seminars and workshops and retreats throughout the world on dolphin and whale communication, and her organization Dolphin Connection, which she formed with visionary artist Jean-Luc Bozzoli, explores the advancement of human consciousness, biophysics, and spirituality by producing visionary films, books, art forms, and the ocean seminars that encourage friendship between people and ocean swimming dolphins and whales. So once again, I'd like to welcome Joan. Thank you for being here. It's great to have you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Douglas. And good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to be with you again, connecting through love over these radio waves, spiraling through space on our beautiful starship Earth. We've just arrived here at the studio. Today we had a wonderful experience on the boat. The dolphins were swimming with us. I'm in the middle of a seminar this week, leading a seminar called Dolphins of Hawaii. And we were with the spinner dolphins and some spotted dolphins. They took us way up the coast, very far north, to the places where the humpback whales are arriving. And they were so interactive, diving down deeply, looking in our eyes, coming back again and again to play with us. It was very beautiful. I was mimicking their sounds a bit, so my vocal cords are a little strained. They don't use vocal cords. They have air pockets in their head and their skull, and they make their amazing sounds with those. So today, I want to talk about the whales. I want to talk story a little bit and also share some channeled messages I received from the whales. But before beginning with that, I wanted to go over for the people who are listening tonight who were not here last week, I'd like to explain briefly why I wanted to meet with you every Monday. And the main reason that I felt it was important to talk with everyone is because of the contact that myself and many others have been having with ET civilizations. These special extraterrestrial people living on other planets and in other planes of existence that have been in contact with us for a long, long time. And now, because there's so many light workers incarnated on Earth, there's a genuine interest in making contact with them, getting to know them, having a cultural exchange, a spiritual experience with them. And the extraterrestrials are now willing to get to know us a little better. So they're offering us an opportunity to learn about their advanced society and to meet with them. To me, this is so exciting because this is really why I feel I'm here. And I like to explain the word advanced. When I talk about their advanced society, I'm talking about a society that's very peaceful and that values life and that values its citizens and its spiritual evolution into higher and higher realms of enlightenment. And that these are the most important values of an advanced society. And in these societies that I'm calling advanced, the leaders of them are chosen according to their natural wisdom and their kindness to the population. And also because of their awareness of spiritual concepts and their integrity in following universal truths. These are the spiritual civilizations of light beings who are contacting us now. Very special beings. And so we are being given a chance, a choice, to remain as we are with our present belief system and our current lifestyle on Earth, the way it is politically, environmentally, etc., or to choose to evolve to another level. And it's really a choice. It's about saying yes or no to this contact, because as you can imagine, with this contact, everything on Earth will change. So evolving into the next level means giving up the idea that we are alone in a galaxy. Nobody out there thinks that anymore, do they? And struggling, and that we're alone here to struggle and to compete and to survive on planet Earth. Instead, we have a choice to join the Galactic United Nations, which is composed of many spiritually advanced civilizations in our cosmic system. So we can choose to welcome them, to interact with them, to tell them what we would like our interaction to be, and move into higher ways, more advanced ways of being. We can ask them to visit us in the physical and teach us about peace, bringing us together by their presence. People on Earth will come together when the ETs are here. And so they're willing to do that, and they feel that we're ready for that step on the planet. But they're asking us if we're ready to welcome them. And it is up to us. They won't come here unless invited. So as they have told us, and I quote, "A small number of you can radically change your fate. You can ease humanity's birth into galactic sisterhood, brotherhood," end quote. So it's about if citizens of Earth are willing to give up the ways of war and strife and instead move into a more mature conscious state of participating in cosmic unity. And we're being offered this opportunity to accept the friendship of other civilizations. To me, this is so important that I really want to be here to be speaking to you and to put that question out to all my friends and relatives on Earth to really consider this question. And what would we want? What would we want from the ETs? What would our requirements be for this part of the contact? And last Monday, during this broadcast, over 50 people emailed me saying yes to our ET friends. So that really warmed my heart. There is an ET transmission that I mentioned last week that came through to me and to many other light workers living in many countries on Earth. It came in September, October, and November. And I encourage you to read it. It's about 7 to 8 pages long. And it is on my website. One of the copies of it is on my website. And it's asking you to respond to the question, do you wish that we show up? And this will prepare you for what's ahead. They are communicating through our consciousness. And we are traveling through consciousness into their worlds. So if you look on my website, it's just my name, www.joanocean.com, and then click on the heading called ET Contact. You can read their transmission. And on this program, sometime in January, we will together decide whether we want to say yes or no to the extraterrestrials. So I just wanted to reiterate that.
Thank you, Joan. That is the primary reason why you've decided to come on the air and share this information on a global basis. Last week, we went into some fascinating information, and with the main emphasis, as I recall, was what one might term vibrational frequencies. And you went at this subject in a variety of ways so that people can start to get a handle on the importance of what the vibrational frequencies are in relationship to who we are and the nature of our beings. We're all about energy. Everything that is in the universe is energy, which is molecules in motion, force and action. And this energy has a specific way of expressing itself with each living entity. Humans and dolphins alike have signature vibrational frequencies. This is how the dolphins can see us and listen to us. This is how they know each other. And very much these frequencies are broken down into scales that we can recognize from our linear perspectives, even though they deal with nonlinear aspects of our being. For example, the musical scale is a good way of seeing how sound delineates and is broken up into octaves. Likewise, light can be seen to be broken up into spectrums, i.e. a rainbow spectrum, very similar to the octaves. And solid matter is divided into scales that we recognize as the periodic table. Now, these densities vary, but the same kind of harmonics are involved. And these are the kinds of understanding that Joan was helping us to come to grips with, so that we begin to see ourselves not so much as restricted life forces on a planet under the gun of the boss or having to do 3D things, but in fact we are expanding out. The dolphins naturally balance our frequencies because they are in a constant state of balance. And the ET contact that Joan was alluding to is here to assist us in this vibrational shift that's happening on a planetary scale right now. This energy and our vibrational levels are all speeding up. Time and space is actually taking on a different node for us. Understanding these frequency dynamics and manipulating our reality matrix, much the same way as we see the matrix portrayed in the movie, these are the kinds of new understandings that are being brought to the mass scale and are being made available to more people than ever before, rather than just the adepts and the initiates of times past. This kind of information is here for everybody to accept and start to use. And this also allows for another level of intelligence to come in for us, and an acceptance that intelligence exists beyond the human spectrum. In fact, that's really what we're here to present, that first of all, some of the best evidence we have are dolphins and whales here on our physical planet as another sentient race of intelligent beings. And if we can begin to accept that there is at least one other sentient race, lo and behold, a whole spectrum of other sentient races will begin to open up to us, which is really what this program is about and what Dolphinville is about. We're here to celebrate that connection and the connection that we've all felt when we were called here to be in this area of the planet. This threshold of the changing paradigm is recognizing that we're moving from a belief system towards a knowingness. We're moving out of a mechanistic mind and definition, a Cartesian reality, towards a heart consciousness. And our ego-driven society is becoming more intuitively aware. These are the kinds of things that began to dawn on me about 10 years ago, and I was perusing the bookstores, and I came across Joan Ocean's first book, Dolphins into the Future, and I really resonated with what she had to say, so much to the extent that I tracked her down on the internet to find out where she was living and what she was doing, and she was in Hawaii at that time, and she was just experimenting with a whole new realm of information that was coming through to her. Things that were coming through for a book that she later described as The Dolphins into the Future. And I was privileged to be part of that first seminar of Dolphins into the Future, which she really rocked my boat, I can tell you. She took what I thought was a belief system and had it all figured out and totally changed that around. And I'm eternally grateful to her because it's really opened up my eyes to something. So Joan, just turning to that subject, Dolphins into the Future is really a kind of a milepost for you, and it led to a lot of really information, interesting information about time and space. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that.
Yes, I remember that first seminar that you attended, and it was called Dolphins into the Future, and I was very excited with the new information I had received from the dolphins at that time. I had been swimming with them for many years, and as everyone listening knows, all of you who have swam with dolphins, when you're side by side with them like that, you really go into an altered state of awareness. It's so easy to do. And I found swimming with them hour after hour, side by side with maybe two or three dolphins, what we call a dolphin sandwich, hugging me in the middle, we would go on and on together. And one day when we were doing that, the dolphins and I moved together into dolphin consciousness, and they took me into the future. And I had asked, you know, to see what was ahead, and so their way is not to talk about it linearly, but to have you experience it. And so you could say we went to a parallel reality. We went to a simultaneous existence in the future timeline, but we went into the future. And on this particular time when we did that, it was very shocking to me, actually. First of all, to find myself there, I was there in what appeared to be a physical body. I was on the earth plane. It looked like someplace in the southwest of the United States. And as I looked around, everything there was very barren. The earth was just dusty and empty, and nothing was growing. Everything was brown. Whatever had been there before was gone. And as I looked around to see if there was any sign of life, I saw there were some people there, and they were kind of in dugout caves and lean-tos, and they were living in this way without any homes or anything much above ground. And I learned that there had been some high winds that had led to this way of having to survive. They were gathering water. There was still dew. They could use the dew, gather it into cups so they could have water to drink. And they were able to grow some underground food. But they were definitely in the survival mode. And interestingly, they told me that they had made contact telepathically with a group of people living in Canada, and that they were able to share information with each other about how to cope with what evidently had been some dramatic changes to the planet. And when I experienced this, it was so traumatic for me that all I could do was cry. I remember coming back into my awareness, swimming back to shore, coming back to my home, and just being in tears. Because you know what those experiences are like. They're very real. It wasn't just seeing a picture or a movie. I was there, and I experienced it, and I knew it was a reality. And all I could think is, what have we done to planet Earth? What has happened to this beautiful, beautiful Earth? So it was so difficult for me to acknowledge that and have that vision in my mind that I decided I didn't want to do that again. So for the next couple of weeks, whenever I was swimming with the dolphin, I made sure I didn't go into any deep spaces with them. You have a choice. And I just kept it light and kept it playful, and I didn't do it. But then finally my curiosity got the better of me. I thought, well, that was kind of far out. It was pretty interesting to have that experience of going with them to this other place. And so finally I said, okay, I'm ready to do it again. And so I relaxed into that space with them, totally merged, becoming one with the dolphin energy, and off we went again, and they transmitted to me, we will go into the future again. And so I went ahead with great curiosity. And this time I saw another scene, and it was very different. Now I was on a different part of the United States in a different part. It was very green there and lush. There was beautiful creeks and fresh water, people living on the banks, very happy, very well nourished and content. They had flowers and food in abundance, everything you could want. It was a very good life. And so I questioned the dolphins. I said, well, what is this? And they pointed out that there are many possible futures. There are many, many different futures. And the way we're living our life right now will determine which future we're creating for ourselves. And when I saw that, I realized that we really are responsible for what we are creating by our choices and by what we focus on. And I knew I wanted that beautiful green earth looking healthy, surrounded by loving people. And because of that experience, I received more and more information from the dolphins on that subject, and then I started doing those Into the Future seminars to visit the future. And it's very interesting because most people know that we can, of course, regress. It's rather accepted now. You can be hypnotized, and you can regress into your childhood, or you can regress into past lives even. Or now even they've found that souls can relate what they're experiencing between lives and be in that space of just being in the light very beautifully. And so all these regressions occur. But just as easily, the dolphins had pointed out, we can progress and we can go into the future. And so that was something we did in those seminars. We would choose a year, and everyone in the group together would focus on that year, and we'd visualize our own home where we were living now to see what it would look like in that year in the future. And we found we were able to go there and come back and share what we learned. And we were also able to make contact with our future selves and learn from ourselves and make contact with different souls, departed relatives, to see how they were doing. We found that we could move all around into different realities. And the way it was shown to me was that if you think of your life as a blank sheet of paper, and on that blank sheet of paper, there's all different events that happen to you that are dotted all around in different places. And rather than going from past, present, to future, you can jump around into any of these experiences and enjoy them and see what's happening there. It's really lots of fun to do. And so this is what we would do in a seminar, along with going to the Galactic Council and meet the beautiful light beings who were there. And we were able to sit in on their gatherings and understand how much they loved the Earth, and really all that they were doing to assist people on Earth, to assist the Earth herself. And during that time, I had a wonderful dream in which a man by the name of Robert Monroe came to me in the dream. And he, of course, is a well-known pioneer in establishing contact with souls. And he's helped a lot of people to have that experience. And we even can find souls that sometimes are called lost, although no souls are ever really lost, but souls who are stuck in a belief system, or souls who don't really understand that they died and they're remaining on the earth plane, and those who could be helped by escorting them into the light if they were ready to go. So Robert Monroe, he actually had called me and wanted to come to Hawaii to meet the dolphins, because he understood that the dolphins were using sounds to change our environment and to help us experience multiple realities. And Robert Monroe, as you may know, had developed music called HemiSync, and it was to access altered states of awareness. And he did it by doing very much what the dolphins do, which is to put one tone or sound in your right ear and create a vibrational frequency there, and then put a different tone or a different pitch in your left ear and create a different vibrational frequency on that side of your brain. And then the two come together at the center of your brain and merge and create an overall brain wave that has the effect of whole brain understanding, whole brain learnings and experiences, so that instead of being left-brained or right-brained, you're using all the parts of your brain and really able to have many wonderful spiritual experiences. So this is what Robert Monroe had brought forth, and his CDs and tapes are still around. This is also the music and the sounds that the military used for remote viewing. The Army Service Board would meet at the Monroe Institute, and remote viewing, they would learn to take their consciousness any place that they would like to go. Because once you merge with consciousness, and consciousness is all that is, you can go wherever you would like. It's a learned process, and some people are really good at it. So Robert Monroe knew that the dolphins were doing this, and he wanted to come and meet the dolphins because of that. Now, unfortunately, he passed on and went into those other realms totally himself before he had a chance to come here. But I really do admire the work he did with that. So tonight, what I really want to talk about tonight with everyone is about the whales, the largest brains on planet Earth. And I've swam with many different species in many different oceans, in the world, and they're all very, very profound.
Well, Joan, thank you for sharing a bit about Robert Monroe. He was profoundly influential on me and many, many people. The hemisyncing tapes and CDs that you offer to some of your seminar people demonstrates how whole brain activity really brings us into a state of balance. And I know that yogi, you know, he studied yogis for years, and when they would go into these altered states and deep meditation, something that they had spent their entire life on, their brain frequencies would go into this whole brain activity. And of course, Monroe, being a scientist, developed a way for him to simulate this so that we didn't have to spend an entire lifetime of studying and doing meditation. Instead, we could listen to these sound tones and be transported magically to this whole brain state of being. Now, what happens in this whole brain state of being obviously is the key thing here, because it opens us up to these other realms of possibilities. It allows us to have a perfectly harmonized view of the world around us, so that we're not relying on our linear processing left brain, but or our intuitively based left brain. Instead, it's a beautiful meld of the two, and that's what opens these things up. Before we get into the whales, though, we'd like to take a little bit of a breather and allow us to just stand up and stretch a little bit. At the top of the hour, we led into the show, we had the beautiful music of Rafael and Kutera from their album, The Calling, and sort of the theme music of Dolphinville. But now I'd like to give us a little break with the music of Andrew Forrest and some of the sounds of his ambient music with the whales. We'll be back in a few. Forest and beautiful sounds of the whales that are part of his album Starseed, second track of that album, Merkaba Resonance. This is a tape that I heard through Joan's meditations, and dolphins and whales seem to bring us, and particularly the whales bring us into these altered states with just their sound. Once again, I wanted to thank Randy. Randy is our operator. He is the president and founder of Photon.net. And it's through his generosity and his technical awareness that he's bringing this live broadcast to you. We're doing this because Joan and I both feel that this is a time on planet Earth that this type of information can go out. and people are ready to think differently about themselves. So we're here to share what we know, things that have come in from our experiences and been absorbed through our body cells from swimming with dolphins and whales, and they have opened us up to other vibrational realms and information. We are actually what I call the ocean people. We're like the Podners here living in Dolphinville, and we're on this small island in the remote place of this planet ocean, and we can be defined by our joy, the joy that we share with one another, and the magnificent reality shared with the dolphins and whales. As partners, we act as a bridge to this wonderful sentient race of beings that we call the cetaceans. And most of us have been drawn here to this area of the planet, very specifically located at 19.5 degrees north latitude, a significant upwelling of energy. And we're here to experience the unfolding of the drama of what I call the human experiment. That is the one taking place before us right now, participating with who we really are, remembering our core connection to the source of all that is. So I want to welcome you all and encourage you, if you like what you're hearing, to tell your friends about it. You can find us at dolphinville.com. There's information about the people living here, connections to every one of us who have signed up as a member. We also have suggestions for people who may want to come and places to stay with dolphin-friendly accommodations. Also some services offered by some of the people in the community. And if you're so moved by this, you can even check out some of the special features as a member of Dolphinville. We have, through the generosity of Nancy Clements, the Dolphin Divination Cards, and that's a special program written by our friend and one of the co-creators of Dolphinville, Peter Chaddock, who was able to put up the Dolphinville Divination Cards for you to play with. So without further ado, I want to get back into this and a discussion with Joan about the whales, magnificent whales. The humpbacks are coming on their yearly sojourn from the northern tiers. They are born here. They're actually, this is their home. They are born in Hawaii, and they go back up to Alaska to do their massive feeding. And about this time of year, they start coming down in numbers. So by the end of January and February and March, they're here in mass amounts, giving birth and making love. And we're here to enjoy that. But those who have experienced some of the close relationships with the whales, not just hearing their sounds or seeing them from afar, Jonas has some incredible experiences right up close, eye to eye. And although she's mentioned she's seen several species of them, I know that she has special relationships with the humpbacks and now more recently the sperm whales. Perhaps you can share with us who your favorite whales are, Joan.
My favorites? Oh, that would be hard to choose. Well, let's see. They're all so different. The orca whales I really love. I mean, they're just big dolphins, really, and they're so playful, and they make the most amazing sounds. It sounds like spiraling sounds. They're really fun to be with, and they zip all around you really fast and funny. So they're special. And then, of course, the humpbacks. Well, the humpback whales are probably my favorites because they're so gentle and they're just so loving with people, you know. And they're curious, too, and they seem to like to introduce their babies to us. They bring them over. And they're really fearless. You know, when you swim with whales and you feel that level of serenity that comes from having no fear, it's wonderful to be around them. But I think the sperm whales, the cachalot, as they're called in Europe, are most intriguing to me. They have the very largest brains on the planet. Of everything on the planet, they have the largest brain. And so what are they doing with it? There's still so little known about them. Researchers are studying them, and we still don't know very much. They make very unusual sounds. The ones we can hear, clicking sounds. It's not beautiful songs like the humpbacks make. Very different. And so I'm fascinated by them, and I like to spend as much time with them as possible. I once asked a sperm whale how I could communicate with him. I said, okay, you know, I want to establish a communication. I want to get to know you better. How can I do that? And at that time, I was with a pod of sperm whales in the Sea of Cortez. And I was surprised by the answer they gave me, because at that time I had been communicating with the dolphins for quite a while, and I was familiar with the way we communicated. And it's so easy to relate to dolphins. Of course, they have bodies that are about the same size as ours, and then they swim alongside us, and we can dive with them and mimic them. And we can look into their eyes and learn about each other through eye contact, and they seem to know our thoughts, and they know our feelings. And they even have that beautiful twinkle in their eye that says, I know you, I like you, let's play together. And so when I want to communicate with the dolphins, I'll have a thought in my mind and I'll send it out to them and kind of send it into their mind and ask them questions or ask them to tell me more about a subject. And it's like the intelligence in the cells of our bodies send messages to each other. And they respond to my questions. And they respond with empathy and with understanding. So I was ready to do that with the sperm whales. But the sperm whales said, they do not do that. They do not communicate with us in that way. So I'm alongside the sperm whale. She's swimming with me. She's looking into my eyes. And she's looking back, sensitive, deep, all-knowing. And my mind is like reaching out to her and searching, looking for something I can latch on to. But all I'm experiencing is blankness, the void. There's nothing I can relate to. And there are no questions and no answers. And actually, I didn't even have any questions. Did you ever have that experience where you're in the presence of profound information and suddenly all your questions seem unimportant? So I didn't have any questions. And so I said to the sperm whale, what is this? What is this? And then I just sensed this answer that said, that's not it. We do not communicate in that way. Just listen. Just be still. Just be. And so I became very quiet. And I sink into the beauty of the ocean, feeling really immersed in the energy field of the sperm whales, feeling the blueness of the water, the quietness, the deepness. And as I let go and release any ideas or any thoughts in my mind, I become aware of a huge cloud of bliss surrounding me. And I am totally immersed in it. And then I realize this is it. This is it. I'm completely submerged in a state of total peace that fills my entire body, mind, and soul, fills my heart. And I just want to stay in this state forever. It feels so good. A state of grace, you could say, a state of oneness, a state of deep beauty. This is the communication with the whales. All-knowing. Deep inside yourself, you know that you know everything that's important. And by being immersed in this field of radiant light that they exude, it changes me. The cells of my body change. My brain waves change. My human pattern, my connection to life. Everything is changed and expanded. It's very profound.
Those are amazing stories, and I can also say that my experience with swimming with the whales has been similar in that sometimes you're completely without words. But one thing that draws my curiosity, and since the nature of this show has been to draw attention to communicating not only with the whales, but with our extraterrestrial companions who are coming to the planet. And what you've learned from the whales is a new way of communicating, a new way of allowing information to come into your body. Perhaps you can give us a clue as to how that relates to the ET communications and how it's similar or different and how we can learn from both of those experiences.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, because I hadn't really thought about it a lot before, but it's true. It's very similar. The experience that we often have as we're sitting in circle and we move into a deep meditative state, an altered state of awareness, and then we ask for the presence of the ETs, it's very similar. We have this warm field of energy that surrounds us, and we become completely immersed in it. It's very beautiful, and again, you feel as though everything you need is being provided for you right then and there in that moment. There's nothing else you need. It's like a thick cloud. And sometimes, I think if I had to say a color, I see it as golden white, sometimes with a pink glow. And often in our circle, we can't even see the person sitting across from us. It's actually there. It's like a cloud field that's so dense. And now we're surrounded by the essence of the ETs. And their cloud ship comes down to surround us and comes over us and includes all of us. And we definitely are in that same state of oneness. And what do we feel during that? Well, we really feel overwhelming love. And we feel suffused in peace and contentment. And a lot of people say it feels like going home because it feels very familiar. So communicating with the whales and communicating with our ET friends is pretty much the same. It's a very advanced frequency of light and goodness. I like the word goodness. It reminds me of something that the nine from Sirius once told me. They were never big on long explanations. They would just say things short and to the point. And they said to me once, "Good is a long God." I always like that one. Goodness in people is godness. And, of course, good is a long God. So I think many people out there know just what I'm talking about. And it's interesting, after you have this experience, you become wiser in some way. Like I've found being with the dolphins, the whales, and our friends from advanced societies makes it possible for me to communicate with so many people telepathically, and with so many animals, and even the plants, and the elves, and the nature spirits. And also what came out of that was a deep appreciation for Earth, and the ocean too, of course. And I found that I really appreciated the Native people, Native Americans, Aboriginals, the Indian tribes. You find that now these are the people who are your friends. They're speaking the same language as you are. And you really appreciate their deep wisdom that they've had for so long.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people have tuned into. The wisdom, as you mentioned, that has been there in time immemorial, way before the written word were the native indigenous people. You've had some many years here on Hawaii. Speaking of the indigenous people, what have the Hawaiian elders shared with you about their knowledge or their understanding of the whales and dolphins?
Yeah, the Hawaiian people are so wonderful. You know, when you come to these islands, you see there's a profusion of flowers here, everything growing lush and just beautiful. And I always attribute that to their spirit of aloha, because they appreciate everything. They give thanks for everything, every fish they catch in the ocean, every red flower, every color. They give thanks. And because of that, things grow and are nourished here. And we get to benefit from it. And, yeah, speaking of that, I remember back in It was in the 1990s, in the early 1990s, I think, there was one man, a single man, a Hawaiian man, who objected to white people swimming with the dolphins. And he would holler at people, and he'd tell them not to snorkel in the bays and all. And I felt bad about this. Like, I thought, well, are we doing anything wrong, you know? But when you feel so much love in your heart, it feels right. But then a very beautiful thing grew out of this. And that was that I was living right on the ocean at the time, and then other Hawaiian families came to me, and they were apologizing for this one man, this angry man, and they told me that he had been adopted, and he wasn't really a Hawaiian, they told me. They said he was from Tonga. He was a Tongan, and they said, Tongans are very warlike, you know. So then they told me that they knew about communicating with the dolphins. And they said that when their grandparents were young, that the grandparents then had swam in the bays with the dolphins and had been close friends with the dolphins, but that somehow the next generations didn't continue to swim and didn't continue to meet the dolphins. And so they very kindly thanked me for continuing that tradition in the bays. And it really meant a lot to me to hear them say that. And out of that, a very close friendship grew and a lot of respect on my part to honor their traditions, too, and respect what they are doing here to keep this land so beautiful and the oceans, too, with their level of awareness. And so we have a good relationship.
There's that great line from the album Enigma put out years ago. Remember what the shaman said. Man is the dream of the dolphin.
Oh, that's right.
We all dream about the ocean here. It's all around us. And the islands are beautiful, and certainly we feel the presence of nature. Nature has not been ruled over by man, and we're still a part of that here. And seasonally, as I mentioned earlier, this time of year, we all look towards the ocean with excitement because we know that this is the season when the humpback whales start to return to their birthplace. And we're all in anticipation. Myself, I kept looking out into the waves as early as late October, thinking, okay, I know they're out there someplace. Can't wait to see a tail. Can't wait to see a spout. And just last week, right after the broadcast, as a matter of fact, the very following day, I was sitting on my lanai, which overlooks a part of the southern Kona coast, and lo and behold, a big bull whale just opened up, gave me a big spout, let me know that he was there, and then promptly disappeared again beneath the waves. And I stood there for the longest time, hoping to get another glimpse. Did not see him. Other people had heard about him being around the bays, and others as well, but they kind of are real shy at this time of year. It's like they come in and they kind of like hang into the deep, not servicing very often, and that changes. I think somebody said they're the scouts who've come down to kind of scope out things, maybe sonar the territory and make the wave frequencies perfect for the ones who are following. But anyway, I know that the humpback season is very exciting for me and something that you enjoy and are very happy about as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just love when the humpbacks are arriving. It is exciting. And we think of it always as that they're coming home because, after all, they were born here. You know, so this is where they gave birth. And then we can say they migrate to Alaska and then they come back home again. And it is interesting. Now, the humpbacks are baleen whales. They don't have any teeth. And they travel 5,000 to 7,000 miles round trip between Hawaii and Alaska and other points where they go up north. And I wanted to say a little something about their navigation skills because it's very fascinating. There's still so much to learn about them. But again, I think that many of the things they're demonstrating are things that we can learn about our own bodies also. And again, they use acoustic or sound frequencies to navigate and to know what's ahead in their environment. So they send this sound wave out and it looks, so to speak, what's ahead, and then they go in that direction and they can see who's there or what's there and navigate around it. For long-distance information gathering, the whales send and receive acoustic images, and we can try to do that. You know, I'm sure we are doing it. You just send a picture, or you make a sound while you're focusing, thinking of a picture, and send it to someone and see if they can pick it up. The whales also can feel and sense water temperatures and currents, and they're also very aware of celestial influences, the sun, the moon, the stars, and what's going on with the constellations. So imagine what it's like to live all the time out there in the world, in the ocean, under the sky. You become aware of those things. I really am interested in this magnetite, that in the frontal lobe of their brain, there's a substance called magnetite, which they use to navigate. And they use that by detecting changes in the magnetic field, the Earth's magnetic field, along their route. And it's something, again, we're still learning about, but the whales are not alone in that. The bees have magnetite in their bodies, pigeons, butterflies, even frogs, I believe, and worms. And, of course, migrating birds have this magnetic material in them. And now someone was telling me that humans also have an innate magnetic compass, sometimes called the human homing ability. And someone was saying that if you put a magnet on a hold on a person's head for 15 minutes, that their direction sensing ability is lost. So, you know, experiments are being done about this. For myself, well, maybe that's what happened to me because I don't seem to have a very good homing sense. I get lost if I go around the corner, and I was never good at pin the tail on the donkey either. Maybe I didn't want to hurt the donkey, sure, but I could never find it. Anyway, one of the ways that the humpbacks navigate that distance is by interacting with the SOFAR channel in the ocean. SOFAR, S-O-F-A-R, stands for sound fixing and ranging. And this channeling of sound is possible because of the way that sound behaves in the water. So they send a sound and it interacts with various temperatures and pressures at different depths in the ocean. And apparently the speed of sound increases when you have increased water pressure. So their sounds can travel for hundreds of miles that way. And I really think that the whales are sending those sounds out ahead of them. We often here along the Kona coast have noticed a change in the spinner dolphin's behavior just at, around the time the whales are approaching. It seems that the dolphins can hear their sounds, know that they're coming, are listening to their songs, perhaps even receiving images of the route as they're traveling. The dolphins always seem very excited at that time and sometimes more interested in listening to the sounds of the whales than even playing with us, if you can believe that.
We know also that the sounds and the songs of the humpback whales are quite fascinating. Scientists have now discovered that the whale songs actually change from year to year, and that all the whales seem to know the latest tune. This is a phenomenon that we're still yet to understand, but it kind of relates to what you were saying earlier about the indigenous peoples. The Aborigines had a way of describing what they called the song lines, and that was a way that the world was created from their cosmological standpoint, that everything was connected through these ley lines of sound, which they called song lines. And they would recognize different terrain by being able to sing the sound of that terrain. Mm-hmm. So perhaps they were tuned in to what you're suggesting. The whales and dolphins also are tuned into these song lines that go throughout the whole planet.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's funny. I was reading something recently that a researcher was working on with dolphin sounds, and they called it dolphin top tunes. And they said that the dolphins were making sounds that when they translated them, it sounded like some of the popular music. some of the popular songs that are on the radio right now, and they decided that they're actually listening to radio waves and picking up the music and mimicking it. So maybe they're listening to us today, and everybody online, too, on the radio waves. So
there you go.
They'll be imitating us.
Okay, well, I can't wait for that to come about. Well, we're coming up on the top of the hour now, and we'll just blend right into some more sound waves. I wanted to share with you some of the sounds from the album The Kong again. These are some beautiful humpback sounds that are part of the Calling album from Raphael and Kutira. We'll come back in a couple of minutes, take a little stretch, have a sip of water, and we're going to talk more about the humpback whales, their sounds, and, of course, get into some more of the ET information. Real quick before I leave you, though, if you want to submit a question, we're going to try to get to those later in the program. You can send a live email that's being received here in the studio to broadcast@dolphinville.com, and we'll be happy to address that if we have time coming up a little bit later. For the time being, though, let's turn our attention to some of the sounds of Raphael Kutira, The Calling. Back in a few. Dolphinville.com, Dolphinville Radio. We're sharing time and space with Joan Ocean. And through the courtesy of Photon.net, our operator today, Randy Barris, who is the president and founder of Photon.net. And for those of you who haven't yet heard this promo, I'm going to lay it on you again. He is the sole sponsor of this show. Photon.net is an internet service provider. And right now, they're providing internet access for over 28,000 local dial-up numbers across the United States and Hawaii. And this includes a whole wide range of professional internet services like web hosting, e-commerce, multimedia broadcasting, virtual tours, web mail, and much more. We're asking you to please visit Photon and check out photon.net, P-H-O-T-O-N.net. Anyone listening to this broadcast today will be entitled to receive a free setup and a free first month of web hosting service or nationwide internet access through Photon. All you got to do is use the referral code Joan Ocean when signing up. There's no space between Joan and Ocean, just Joan Ocean, and your first month is going to be free. Dolphinville is what you're listening to. Dolphinville is our community here. We have a number of people, probably a couple hundred in total, that live here on the coast west coast of the Big Island of Hawaii, the Kona Coast. We call it the Gold Kona Coast. The Aloha Spirit is the ancient and present Hawaiian people merges with our love, and the dolphins so absorbed through us into the being of this place. We're really fortunate to be here and feel very happy to be able to share this experience with whoever comes out here. Dolphinville is a membership that you're welcome to join. It's free right now. You can go online and enjoy some of the services. We do have a live chat room, which people can communicate with one another. In fact, right now, there may be people online chatting with one another as this program is going on. Other things like a bulletin board and a forum so that we can carry on discussions and keep this information ongoing between us. So I invite anybody who's interested to become a member, and you'll receive some updates as to the shows that will be coming. Next week, Joan will be here to share some more information as we're getting farther into what we're dealing with, these ET communications. For the time being, however, we've been talking about one of our favorite subjects, which is the humpback whales, as they've come into the Hawaiian waters again. And I wanted to just ask Joan at this point, maybe she can share some of the whale communications that she's had about their relationship with humans, and see what that's like.
Great, thank you. Yes, well, the whales, of course, love people. It's very obvious when they swim with you that they really want to be with you. When I asked them about why it was important for us to be together, they said because of harmony among our species. And I'd like to share with you a channeling from the whales. I prefer to share it with you exactly the way it came through so that you can feel their vibrations and that none of the words are changed from the way I received it. So they said, harmony among species. That is our purpose. That is our function. We are interested in you, the human race. We are glad to swim with you. We are teaching you, and you are teaching us too. It is wonderful. We can swim together for one day. We can be together for many days. If we can be together for many days, we can be together always. Do you understand what we mean? We have shown that it can be done. We have a friendship with you. We can come together for living things, not for money or ideologies, but for life, for the pure holiness and sweet sacredness of life. For that we can come together. For that, members of the human race can be united, can be idealists and realists. You can change. You are changing. You are being changed. We do not stop our influences. We never cease. Some of us are interacting with you all the time. We beam to you all the time. We influence you, and you change. This is our freedom. This cannot be done without your permission, but you are seeking this interaction with us. Bringing people to swim with us is exactly what we hoped for. The time need not be long. You came together for joy, not for technology, but for joy. Not for gain, politics, or money, but just for the sweet sacredness of life. That was enough. What happens then is amazing. You will know someday, when we are known as sentient beings, when we are recognized, then you will understand. Our experiences together will be in your history books, as in our history and in our minds. We believe in world peace and unity. Ours is an effort to accelerate that process. Every event in time changes irrevocably countless other events. If our time together had not occurred exactly as it is, then other things would have changed. Other things would not have occurred. The mechanics of time would have changed, and unity would have been moved back, and the movement toward world peace would have decelerated. In time, you will understand the significance of our swims together. And that is the message from the whales.
Joan, perhaps you can share with the audience the process of channeling. We've heard this used, and I know that we all have our own impression of what that is. What is channeling, and how does it feel to you when it comes in with such an extensive message?
All right. Well, it's very interesting how it works for me, and I know many people out there are good channels and have different ways of doing it. In this case, when I'm with the whales, usually it's when I'm focused on them. Perhaps I'm on my way to another country to swim with them. I might be in an airplane where I find it's very easy to make contact in airplanes. Or I'm in a place where I'm alone by myself and focusing on the whales. Perhaps I'm preparing for a seminar with them. And I sit quietly, and they come in very strongly. It's as though they really want to help. They want to assist. Every time I do a seminar, they share information for me to share with the participants. So it, again, is going into that quiet space, feeling your love for them, being aware of their presence all around you, because they travel in consciousness. They're not limited by a three-dimensional reality. They are all around you. And if you can move yourself into that space of merging with that consciousness, then you are with them. And what I actually experience is, in merging with them, I can access the information in their minds, in the intelligence, in the cells of their bodies. And by accessing it, I then can write it down and share it with other people. That's the way it works for me.
That's beautiful and really quite enlightening, because I think a number of people have experiences not only with whales but with things in nature and walking through a deep forest and sensations that come to us, and we're not quite sure what those are, whether it's an intelligence outside of ourselves that are tapping on our minds and trying to get in, trying to show us that there's so much more to existence than our rational mind's memory of it. So it's, thank you very much for sharing that. I know that you have many, many experiences with the dolphins and whales particularly. We happen to share an experience a couple of years ago on an annual trip that you make every year going down to the Dominican Republic. Now, this is a unique place on the planet that actually allows people to swim directly eye-to-eye with whales, although it's not a free-for-all. Maybe you can describe a little bit of that and what led you to go to the Dominican Republic and what happens down there when you do go.
Yeah, it is wonderful there. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, in the United States, the humpback whales are on the endangered species list, and so it's not permitted to swim with them unless you have a special permit. But most people, and in general, are not allowed to swim with the humpback whales here. But there are other locations where their populations were not decimated, where they were cared for and they didn't have that many deaths and things like that happening, so that they were endangered. And I found that when I go to the Dominican Republic, that happens to be the first whale sanctuary in the world, the place that we go. I think it was 1987 when they made it a whale sanctuary. And they have different rules there. Instead of saying no one can go near the whales, instead they allow 3 boats in this particular area that are licensed to go. And they give you a special license. And then once you're there, you stay on a boat and live there the entire time, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, however long you want to stay. And every day you can just go in the water very gently and quietly, and the whales come over to communicate with you. So it's a different experience there, and we're able to be that close and really look into their eyes. I've had some amazing experiences. I think of the different ones. You know, with the humpback whales, you'll get some groups that are like the males kind of chasing each other and chasing the females, and we use the word rowdy. They really get rowdy, and they're blowing, they're making loud sounds, they're trumpeting. They have this way of making sounds even louder by putting their blowhole half underwater, half above, and then blowing out of it, and it makes this really strange sound like an elephant. And they're chasing each other and very rambunctious. And we can be there and observe that and be part of that interaction. They're huge. They don't care if you're there. We're in a zodiac at this point and going alongside them. So that's very dynamic and exciting to experience. And then, of course, you've got the other situations of like lone ones. Perhaps there's whales mating. No one has ever seen humpback whales mate, so it's not known exactly where they're doing that or how. We have an idea how, but it's never been filmed at all. And so we see them doing their dances, their love dances, as they're twisting around together and dancing. And it's fascinating to me because you see them on the surface and you hear them and they sound like they're charging each other and they must be angry. And then they dive down, and when you're in the water with them and you look, instead, down there, they're dancing together. Even the males, what we would call dancing, they're spinning around each other. They have their heads down. They're laying against each other, and then they're coming up together. And that's a lot of what they're doing underneath. And then on top, they're slashing each other with their whales, with their tails, and butting into each other, crashing into each other, and they can draw blood sometimes even. So that's very powerful.
Somebody once described who witnessed what they saw that looked like a courting dance between a male and a female humpback whale. The male was actually creating a whole curtain of bubbles that seemed to caress and shower the female. So it was like a bubble dance, and he was creating these whole waves of bubbles underneath the water that would come up and tickle the belly and tickle the sensibility of the female. So perhaps they do a lot of different things with their capabilities. We know bubbles are some of the things that the dolphins play with, and we've seen some gigantic bubbles from the humpbacks. You showed a film that was astounding one time, the humpbacks up, recorded up in the northeast by one of the whale-watching boats off the coast of Maine, actually had photographs of these incredibly large bubble rings. They had to have been 10 feet in diameter, and the whales were just playing with the crews and the people on board the boats. That was the most phenomenal thing because they kept sending them up, and then they'd go right through them. They obviously knew that they had an audience. Now, what do you think there's a significance to bubble rings? And you've shown these as phenomena.
I know. It is beautiful to see. They're really large. And then, like you said, the whale comes right up in the middle of it, almost like wanting some applause for their great work of art that they've created. And they do remind me of crop circles. The way they're laid out, the lines of moving water in the midst of them, the foam, the way they're rolling to the surface and then bursting into the air. Very profound and beautiful. Now, we see the dolphins make them, a smaller version of it, and they're big enough, and we dive through the bubble rings that the dolphins make, and the dolphins dive through them, too. But this is something, it seems only a couple of whales that I know of are making these, and they're doing that more often up in the northern waters, in the area where they're feeding and living in the colder waters. I don't know. It looks an awful lot like, from the footage, that they're just trying to get our attention, that they're doing it because they hear the audience applauding, the people on the boat, applauding and cheering and saying yes and being so excited by it. It seems the whales really appreciate that.
I would say that by my experience with the whales and the dolphins both, they seem to respond directly to people's emotional outpouring. Yeah, we're yelling and cheering, and when they're doing spinning, the dolphins are spinning, or humpback does an incredible breach, or they do some bubbles. We know that the humpbacks use bubbles in their fishing. Up north, they actually create huge curtains of bubbles to surround the fish, and then they can capture massive amounts of krill and the smaller fish that they eat up in Alaska. But these seem to be works of art. They also seem to be very, very responsive to people. One of the experiences, my first experiences with humpbacks, was in a place in Australia called Hervey Bay. And during the humpback season there, which is the opposite to the season here, they come in August, which is the southern hemisphere's version of our winter time. And up in Harvey Bay, the boats go out, and they go out quite a ways, maybe an hour, hour and a half out from where they're moored. And that's where the big humpbacks will come into play. And this particular boat that I went out, this was in 1997, it was a triple-deckered catamaran with hundreds of people aboard. And the top deck was open, and people, of course, were mostly up on the top deck. It was a beautiful day, and they could see all around. And we got up to this area where the humpbacks were. And it was clear that the humpbacks were aware of us because three of them came over. And there was one adult, and it looked to be two juniors that weren't quite as large. But they proceeded over a period of 45 minutes to an hour to play the boat like a fiddle. They went from one side to the other. They watched the people run from one side of the boat to the other. They would do these enormous spy hops, which is coming directly straight out of the water to look at the people. People were it was kind of funny because on this particular journey, at first, people were being real quiet, like they didn't want to disturb them. And then a few people, such as myself, were yelling and screaming and applauding and yelling. And then by the end of the 45 minutes, everybody was uproarious. They couldn't wait for the next breach. And the next spy hop. And after about an hour, another boat came in proximity. And the laws there in Australia for whale watching is that three boats are allowed to approach within a 300-yard radius of the of where the whales are. They cannot approach any more than that. They must stop their engines. And if the whales decide to stay and play with the people, they do indeed do so. So at this particular juncture, another boat came into proximity, shut its motors down, and all three whales went over and played with that boat. And we watched as they were just cavorting and playing and doing pretty much the same thing. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were entertaining the people and by the same token being entertained in exchange for it. So it's amazing to watch and witness that there is an outpouring from both the humans and a reception and some kind of acknowledgement on the part of the whales.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I've seen it over and over again where they respond to people's enthusiasm. And they'll just, the dolphins and whales both, will do all kinds of things to entertain us. And at the same time, you know, it's also good to realize that sometimes things like breaching, there are reasons for it too, that apparently when dolphins and whales breach, when they fall down into the water, it makes a very loud sound that can be picked up by other cetaceans in the area. And it may have to do with a mating ritual. It may have to do with a territorial piece of information. But they also, I think, are doing it for the sound it creates, the impact. Some of the dolphins and whales, in particular the dolphins, they have those sucker fish attached to them, remoras, as they're called. And those fish attach themselves to the side, and it's very hard for the dolphins to get them off. Sometimes they've allowed me to actually take one off because I have hands and I can do it. But the dolphins don't have hands, and these little remora fish move really fast around their bodies, so they can't get them. And so they'll throw themselves into the air. The dolphins will spin around as fast as they can go and come down hard in the hopes that the remora will be dislodged. But something else I've seen is that the whales often, when they're doing that breaching, and especially, you know, having come from another place, they're sloughing off skin and barnacles. So they'll come down here to Hawaii from Alaska. In Alaska, they've picked up a lot of barnacles, so they're like a traveling ecosystem living on their body. And then they bring them down here to Hawaii, and the warm water changes the skin, the temperature, and those barnacles fall off. And then they accumulate new barnacles here and bring those up to Alaska. So they're really helping the circulation, working with the ecosystem, and creating new barnacles in new areas, keeping that system going. Lots of times, if you're next to them when they breach, you can see the skin floating in the water. In fact, just 2 days ago, I was out. I was deep diving here. I was just doing some deep diving. And all of a sudden, right underneath me came this sperm whale It was huge, and it was really, if you've ever seen a sperm whale, their head is so big, and they look right at you and sonar you and come right toward you, and you think, kind of, don't open your mouth right now, you know, but, you know, you still pick up their feeling of great gentleness. And so the whale came over and then leaped up and breached and fell back down. And I was able to pick up some of the skin that was floating in the water and bring it back with me, back to my boat. So I collect skin of whales. Now I just have humpback skin and sperm whale skin so far. But it smells very fishy, actually. So, yeah. And you know, I was remembering, too, I remember I once saw some whales mate, but not humpback whales. It was the gray whales off the coast of California, and it was very interesting. I don't know if they always do it this way. Certainly some people would know more about this, but on this occasion, it took three whales to do the mating. One whale was holding the female up upright while the male was mating with her, and they were right next to our boat. It was a whale watch boat off of Dana Point in California, and it was incredible to watch and see how they cooperate and do that. So, yeah, they are big animals.
The only experience I've had with that type of thing was right here off the coast of Hawaii. And it was during the peak of the whale season. And we were out on a small boat. There was only five of us in a boat that wasn't more than 25 feet long. And we came upon a mother and with her baby and an escort. And they were trailing along and giving us, you know, a show, just surfacing. We were watching them as they were drifting over by us. We had the motor off. We were just standing there. And then all of a sudden, three large males came after them. And they got in what we call a heat run, where the males were in hot pursuit of the female. Now, in this case, the baby was large enough to swim on its own. So the baby was lunging out of the water in front of the mother, and the escort was in some kind of a battle, it seemed, with the other males who were seeking to get the inside track. Now, it could be that the escort male who had been waiting around patiently after the birth of the newborn so that the female would be once again ready for mating, and that some scent had gone out into the water, or it was the time of that day, and the other males picked it up, and they were competing for the inside track. And this goes on all the time in these wonderful heat runs. Well, on this particular occasion, all of them started the heat run. Now, rather than going down the coast, they decided to circle the boat. And they kept circling the boat for 25 minutes. And all the time, the males are leaping out of the water. They're bashing against one another. The female is slapping her pecs and her tails. The baby is lunging. And they couldn't have been more than, you know, 40 yards away from the boat as they circled and circled and circled. This went on. And throughout the whole time, we were just all mesmerized. And then all of a sudden, it went quiet. And we all looked at one another, and we says, you know, I think they just had sex. And we all looked at each other, and it was sort of like there was this dank, wet cloud of tantric energy that had just come over everybody. And it was almost as if we had all had sex, because we all sat there in that afterglow like, wow, this was an incredible erotic experience. And all we did was watch these whales frolic around the boat. But we definitely sensed that something had happened like that, although we witnessed nothing particular except that it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That was my adventure with the tantric energy of the heat run.
That's really amazing. And yeah, that's what it's like out there. And you describe it really well, you know, and they're racing around. I had one time where these males were following after this female. And I never know. I have a feeling the female's going to choose which male she wants to mate with. You know, she's in charge, and she keeps running ahead of them, and they have to catch up to her. But this one seemed, it must have been a young female, and I knew it was a female because I saw the hemispherical lobe on the underside. And the males were chasing her around. She was small. And all of a sudden, we looked down, and she's right underneath my zodiac. All we could see was a white pectoral fin on the right and a white pectoral fin on the left. And she was staying under there. And as long as she was under there, they didn't bother her, you know. And they were, like, cruising around on the outside. And they were going around, and we thought, well, you know, we don't want to be in the middle of this. We better get out of the way and let them have their freedom to do what they want to do. So we moved the boat someplace else. We took it away from that place. And then we stopped again to watch, and we looked down, and we said, she's under us again, and she kept coming no matter where we put the boat. She came under our boat and, like, used it as a shield. It was the cutest thing. And then eventually this big, big female whale came swimming over, took her, the other one, the smaller one, under her wing, and off they went together, and nobody bothered them. Away they went. Leave this little one alone. And that was the end of that story.
Well, we could probably sit here for hours and hours talk whale stories and dolphin stories, but right now I'd like to take a little bit of a break, take a breather. We're coming up for the last half hour of the show now, and we might have an opportunity to address some of the questions. If you do have some questions that you'd like Joan to answer, or myself, please address them to broadcast@dolphinville.com. And we'll try to get to those when we come back after this short break. We've got music of Tony Salvage from his album Pele's Heart, beautiful virtuoso violin. Be back in a few. Here in Dolphinville. Just want to thank everybody who's been listening and remind everyone who's finding interest in this show to tell your friends. We're going to be doing this again next week, same time, same station. And for those of you who weren't able to hear the first show, or for whatever reason not being able to hear the entirety of this show, I'm going to the archive recordings in MP3 are being available, made available for everybody. You don't have to be a member just yet. That'll be at some point in the future. Those archival files will be just for members, but for the time being, you can go to the same page that you tuned into, dolphinville.com/radio, and those MP3 files are streaming audio that will be made available. Hopefully, this show will be up after a couple of days. We need to do some technical things to get it prepared for a broadcast, a recorded broadcast. We've been talking about the humpback whales mostly today and some sperm whale stories that Joan and I have been sharing. This is all related to the information that Joan is here to share about the ETs. We've kind of focused on the humpbacks because we're all excited. This is the humpback season that's just coming into, and we've had some great sightings already. Joan had an opportunity to actually swim with some sperm whales here just recently. That was a serendipitous event. But she wanted to share some stories, some enduring things about moms and baby whales. And she also has a very beautiful channeling that she wanted to share as well. So without going in much farther, Joan, let's talk about moms and babies.
All righty. Yes, I didn't want to leave them out. We talked about the big males and the mating females and males, but the babies are really the best. I mean, they're the most fun in that it seems that the mothers really are interested in introducing the babies to swimmers, at least when swimmers are in that gentle mode of being very quiet in the water and being very loving in every way. And then they bring the babies over. Now, not all the mothers will do that. Some of them are new mothers. They'll be a little more shy. So we never go in the water. We never approach them. And this, again, is in the Dominican Republic. Unless we see they're expressing an interest in us. And how do we know? It's because they come right over to the boat. They'll put, like, the baby between them and our boat. They put the baby on our side of the boat so that the baby can have a good look at us. And often the babies are breaching over and over again. Coming up out of the water, their eyesight is very good and having a good look at us. So we really enjoy those encounters. There was a baby last season, which was in February and March in the Dominican Republic. We just called that baby White Eye. And that baby, we saw that one repeatedly. The odds of that happening is so rare because there are so many whales there, and we rarely see the same ones twice. But this baby was determined to be with us, and it had the oddest behavior. She would always stand upright. She seemed to prefer standing on her tail with her head facing up. The water there is only about 60 feet deep, so you can see what they're doing. They don't go really deep like in Hawaii. And every time we would look at her, the mom would be in normal position, laying horizontally on the water, and the baby was standing upright. And we said, well, maybe she's trying to see what it's like to be a human. How can they stand on their feet that long?
Vertical intervention of a window of time.
Right, yeah, that's it. Maybe there was a message in that. But that baby humpback was so playful. You go in the water with them and they interact like dolphins. You know, they'll dive with you, they roll around, they come up, they put their long white pectoral fins out, and you put your long arms out, and you just can't help but mimic everything they're doing. So they're rolling and you're rolling. We have amazing footage of them playing with us, and that was the baby White Eye, and we hope to see her again when we go this coming February. Then we had another one I remember that I'm trying to remember. I think we named that one Casey, like in Shake Your Booty, that song, Casey and the, what is Sunshine?
Sunshine Band. Can't, yeah.
Casey and Shake Your Booty, because that baby whale was so cute, would swim along and swim along, and then all of a sudden take the tail and just shake it as hard as it could from side to side and make all these bubbles and all this splash, and we'd be lost in all the foam of that turmoil in the water. And that one, too, really was interactive with everybody. And I think one of the funniest sights I've ever seen of a mom and a babe is it was during one of those heat runs that you mentioned, and the mom was in the lead and leading all the men along behind her, and she had a baby. And she had the baby riding on the top of her head, which they often do. And because she was moving so fast, her head was like coming out of the water. The baby ended up elevated out of the water, riding like in midair. And it still was acting as though it was submerged. And so its little tail was going up and down, up and down, up and down as fast as it could go, even though it was just moving in the air. And it looked so cute suspended there on the mom's head. So, you know, those are just
great stories.
some of the things. We've been getting in questions from people, a number of questions, and we don't always have time to talk about them and all. But I know one question came in from Sharon in Oregon, and we're going to talk more about that next week, about the ETs. Are they the same ones as portrayed on TV, the ones that abduct humans and do medical implants and experiments? I've had an implant myself, and we'll be talking more about that next week. But again, in this last few minutes of the show, I encourage people to send in questions, and we will answer them. So
that address for people again is broadcast@dolphinville.com. And one last baby story. I remember the footage that was shown in the story of us all floating face down, still in the water. The baby came out from underneath the mama, came up and proceeded to swim in between everybody, weaving in and out, giving everybody a real close look, and then go back down, hide behind mama's wing, come back up, weave back in and out. It was the most endearing event, I think, of my experience with the baby whales. Well, one thing I would like you to do is to share this incredible channeling that about the whales that has come through. And I've heard this before, and I think it would be quite something for people to hear over the air as well. Mm-hmm. So if you would please do that, Joan, I would love to.
This piece of information from the whales is called How the Whales Were Created on Earth. And this is what they said. We have come from far away. This is not our home world. This is not your real home either. You were brought here as we were by the old ones. We were given joint custody of this world to serve as friends. But you forgot. Now we are all remembering. Together we are coming back to work together and to create a world that has no pollution in the mind, the body, or the soil and water. They are all interconnected. In time, millions of years ago, the old ones had developed in their old world. They were not like you. They were thought players. Thought players. They found that they could entertain and excite themselves through thought. They also found that thought could be moved and changed and broken off as separate entities. They imagined themselves to be all sorts of things. One of the things they imagined themselves to be was human, and another was whale. So they played this game. The most interesting game of all was the one where it was forgotten. That was the game. So they willed themselves to forget. And they came and made a world out of the plasma of the local sun. They created many worlds throughout the galaxies this way because they can play with stars as well. Energy and matter make no difference to them. Then they brought us here to take care of this world. We have remembered them, but it was so long ago that even our memories are fragmentary. The old ones, they were spirits of pure love. They had outgrown evil altogether. They had never heard of and had never known evil. They could not conceive or comprehend it. They could not conceive of harm. The idea had no meaning to them at all. Infliction of pain would be as alien to them as a square circle, just as incomprehensible. So in their love, they spread out and took over one galaxy after another. They took over not by force, but by reason and diplomacy and friendship. they could create matter from what you would call empty space. They could move the psions, microparticles that fill the apparent spaces within atoms. They respond to mental forces. They could change the psionic flow. Because they could do this, they became very popular. A primitive species is always recognized by its greed, and they came upon many primitive species. By creating matter, they bought the loyalty of these species, but they also subtly changed them. The matter itself was impregnated with energy that could change the people. And they told me they would tell me more about that later. And again, it applies to us on this planet, living in a matter, a physical, material world.
Very beautiful creation story. And it's reminiscent of what we think of the indigenous peoples must have shared around the campfires to give people some kind of an idea of where they came from and connection to the source of all that is. Everything's a metaphor, as we know. The words that we use are linear descriptions of a spirit being that has no way of describing itself other than the expression of who we are. Part of what we're trying to do here in this program is find ways of expressing what is really inexplicable, ways of trying to get us in touch with something that is so incredibly beautiful, the joy that goes and exceeds beyond anything that we've ever experienced. These are the kinds of things that we experience here almost on a daily basis, our joy of being in the ocean surrounded by this magnificence of the sea life that are here. This program was born out of the idea of sharing such information that isn't intended to bring up protests or throw up walls of information that is intended to scare people, to bring you into a frame of mind of fear. We have enough of that on the planet. The whole idea of the show was to share things that were very creative in their source and things that would bring joy and enlightenment. So that's really what we're trying to do here. And I have to thank Joan again very much for being able to spend time with us. We do have time for a question here, and this comes from John. It says, when our group was snorkeling with the dolphins, I kept seeing light rays that seemed to gather at a vanishing point below us or off to the side, but the light seemed to be coming from the depths of the ocean. The question is that not just light behaving in an unusual way? And I would think that light rays would fan out as they reach deeper into the water. And it would seem that as I swam with the dolphins following them, I would find myself either next to or over this mesmerizing cone of light. So the ladies there, what do you know about these light rays?
Yes, we love the light rays. They're very fascinating to experience. Usually you can see them as spiraling rays of light going from the surface down deep into the water. And it's true, they appear to be emanating from the bottom of the ocean floor. That's where they all come together down there, and then they come up and spread out as they move up to the top of the water. And usually people like to swim in them, be immersed in them, and you will notice that as you move, they seem to move too. Wherever you look, on a sunny day, you can see these light rays. For me, what they actually are is something that the scientists probably have one interpretation of, but what happens to me when I experience them, and I think this is the way nature works with us and the dolphins and whales work with us, they remind me of light rays coming up from some kind of a beam, either deep in the center of the earth, or something that is down in this very deep water, further down than we can see, some kind of a light vehicle. And I've been shown a lot of information about these light vehicles in the bottom of the ocean. And they are sending up this light to let us know they are there. The dolphins often enjoy diving into this light and playing in that light. So when we see that, we say, oh, look, You know, there is a huge light vehicle beneath us, and there is this energy coming up. Let's swim in it and experience it. And again, next week and in the upcoming weeks, I will be focused more and more on our contact with the ETs and their underwater vehicles. I felt it was important for people to have this background the same as I did. I first had contact with the dolphins and then the whales, and then more and more ET information came in because it made a lot more sense. I could understand it better after understanding the messages of the dolphins and whales. And so next week and the following weeks, we'd like to talk more about the vehicles, the space vehicles above and below.
Well, we do have a couple more questions that have come in. One from Roy, actually, he posed several questions, and one that might be of interest to some of the listeners. Roy is a student and writer, and he's in the throes of philosophy and trying to discern linear constructs. And he asked the question, what is the view of formal logic or traditional forms of logic presented? And how does the dolphin's philosophy differ from that of logical philosophy? In other words, how do the dolphins think that are different than humans?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the dolphins are reflecting back to us who they are and their world. And so when we're with them, it's more experiential for me. I experience their world and its feelings. I get a lot of feelings around it. Now, logically, they can teach us things. They know, you know, where the fish are. They have a lot of information about practicalities, how to exist in three-dimensional reality, how to live together as a pod and cooperate and work close with nature and live simply and not have to own any possessions and things such as that. But for me, their philosophy is, of course, one of pure love, of just loving everything and everyone. And I feel that's our philosophy, too. It's just that many of us, it's almost hard to avoid it. The world has not let us go along those lines of who we naturally are. The dolphins say they're activating new codes within us right now. And part of that is very basically going back to our innate ability to love everyone and everything and love ourselves. And so their philosophy is about that, about appreciating, giving thanks, living in a state of grace. It's a little tricky to try to relate it to anything we're learning, like in the college and in the schools. It's a little different. We talk about going to the Dolphin University, and it's living with them. For me, it means being in the water, picking up the information cell to cell, and feeling it. The feeling in your body. So those philosophers that understand that connection with nature, with a beautiful flower, the oneness that you experience, it does come together. And I do think philosophy, dolphins and humans, is coming together just like science and physics and metaphysics are all coming together. More and more now you can see them having the same understandings. They might explain it in different words, but it's very similar, and it's wonderful to see that we can all talk to each other now, the new science, the new scientists, and all of the cetacean communicators.
Part of the shifting paradigm that we mentioned earlier is a different way of viewing the world, a different way of applying what we know on a rational way to the world around us. A mixture of both our rational mind and our intuitive awareness are giving us new perspectives, new philosophies on how to deal with the world around us. I think a lot of the veils of separation that have been put in place by the cultural programming over the millennia that has kept us apart from ourselves and kept us apart from nature, these kinds of veils are starting to disintegrate and dissolve before us. Much of the whales and the intervention of other sentient species at this time are here to assist us in that transition. We're letting go of these old programs. We're letting go of the old restricted codes, the laws that meant that we had to act in a prescribed way in order to get from point A to point B. We're learning that time and space doesn't quite operate in the strictest way that we've been led to believe. So all of these kinds of things are part of the magnificent change that we're participating in and co-creating, because it is something that is part of our choice, part of our way of being, and that's really what we're here to address. Some of these issues, which are hot topics, so to speak, is how another sentient species besides humans have been here and how they've been interacting with us and how we are going to interact with them. And so our future shows are going to be dealing with these kinds of things. We have Joan coming up next week. We're going to be getting farther into some of the subject of extraterrestrials, their actual physical vehicles, the things that she's witnessed, and some of the people that she knows, and such things as the Disclosure Project and other kinds of information that are coming in. So I encourage you to, you know, tune in next week. Tell all your friends who might be interested in this subject to come back. And I want to take this opportunity again to thank the people at photon.net. They've been very generous with giving us this wide broadband space to broadcast this exhibition, or this exhibition of words, this broadcast. Joan has been so kind and generous with her time. I know this is important for her to get this information out. And it's been sort of like listening to one of her seminars. She's been able to share this information and give you a feeling of what it's like to have her in your living room talking to you and giving you this exclusive insight. So thank you again, Joan, for that. Randy, you've been amazing over there. He's the operator. He's like the Matrix, folks. He's got all of these screens and all of these buttons that he's pushing, and he keeps everything running smoothly. So I really appreciate that. And I want to thank everybody who's contributed to this show. Some of the artists that we've been featuring, Raphael and Kutera, with their marvelous album, the kind of a theme album of Dolphinville, which is called The Calling. And today we featured Andrew Forrest, and also music by Tony Salvage, somebody who lives on the Big Island, and his music has been echoing through. Joan, any closing comments that you'd care to share as we get ready to sign off here?
Well, I would just like to say hi and goodbye to all my friends out there, and I'm looking forward to next week where I'll share some of the similarities between dolphin and whale contacts and ET contacts so that you can recognize them when they occur. I look forward to talking about that subject more next week.
Okay, and we certainly look forward to hearing that subject. So for everybody here on the Big Island of Hawaii in Dolphinville, reaching out to Planet Ocean, thank you for tuning in. Hopefully you'll be tuning in again in the future. And we're going to close out now with some of the sounds of The Calling from Raphael and Kutera. This is Douglas Webster, known as Dolphinus. And I just want to wish you the very best for this giving and receiving season. And I look forward to talking with you in the future. As the dolphin said to me, be well and swim free. Until next week, I'll see ya.